especially the host mic. It's gotta go all the way.
Time for that pop culture love fest for the slightly obsessed. Pack Rat Planet Radio. And here's your host, Stephen Pitalo.
Hello, everyone. Greetings from Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Pack Rat Planet Radio. How's everybody doing this fabulous 4th of July weekend? Well, welcome to the second edition of Pack Rat Planet Radio, the throwback pop culture love fest for the slightly obsessed, where we'll talk about music, movies, TV, and more from the 20th century. We'll be celebrating anniversaries, listening to some interview clips from Berlin's Terry Nunn, Greg Kinn, the Thompson Twins' Tom Bailey. We'll also play some games, do some trivia, and wind down the 4th of July holiday in only the Pack Rat Planet Radio possibility. So, Liam McEnany is back next Sunday at 5, and it looks like we're off and running. Now, joining me today, fellow pop culture geek and freak himself, an entertainer, a magician, a showman, a one-man showman to be exact, a burlesque host, and most recently, a circus ringmaster for the Big Apple Circus. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Nelson Lugo.
Hey, internets. How are you?
How are you doing this fantastic holiday weekend?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much for asking.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I am.
We'll be talking with the wonderful Nelson Lugo a little bit later about all the things that he is into and sort of a background on his particular take on things, which I guarantee you is worth the price of admission on the radio. But first time, as always, it's time for the Rock Dog Report. Rock Dog! That's right, the Rock Dog and Road Hog Report is our legacy band tour update for the month of July. Let's take a look at what we've got on the roster today. Oh, of course, as always, a little bit of metal for you. We've got Mr. Heavy Metal himself. The guys from Van Halen on the road right now, Sunday, July the 5th, Seattle, Washington, July 7th, Portland, Oregon, July 9th, Concord, California. San Bernardino, California on July 11th, July 14th at Irvine, California. They're playing a lot of amphitheaters, so looking forward to seeing them outside, I suppose. Also at Mountain View, California at the Shoreline Amphitheater. Salt Lake City, Utah at the... Is that the USANA Amphitheater? I guess. They're at Red Rocks on the 20th, July 22nd, Cricket Wireless Amphitheater in Bonner Springs, Kansas. First Midwest Bank Amphitheater in Tinley Park, Illinois, the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater in Maryland Heights, Missouri, July 28th at the First Niagara Pavilion, and July 30th at Darling's Waterfront Pavilion in Bangor, Maine. And I don't have to tell you, when it comes to Bangor... Yeah, exactly. I blew that joke. Jeez. I used to date a girl from Maine, and I went up to Bangor. Anyway, additionally... We'd like to take a look at the festival report. Consequently, with our festival stuff, we'd like to see what classic and legacy bands are playing. Now, currently, you'll be able to head out to Sheridan, Wyoming for Rock on the Railroad, August 6th through 8th. Get this. REO Speedwagon, Bret Michaels, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, the Pat Travers Band, Quiet Riot, Firehouse, Eddie Money, Stephen Piercy from Rat, Foghat, Jack Russell's Great White, L.A. Guns, Kip Winger, and Trickster. That's right, Trickster. I was wondering...
I didn't realize half of those bands were still alive.
Yes, they are around. Why? And touring.
Okay.
Well, you know, people need to pay their cable bill.
Sure.
Our last stop on the festival circuit is the 80s Rewind Festival. It's on for the fifth year in Perth, Scotland. So all of our fantastic Scottish folks know what's going on with the 80s Rewind Festival. The 25th and 26th of July. Now, here's the lineup that we can take a look at there. On the 25th, Bananarama, Thompson Twins' Tom Bailey, who we'll be hearing from later, Howard Jones, Jimmy Somerville, Five Star, The Orchestra, which is members of ELO, Altered Images, Wang Chung, and members of The Jam. July 26th, that Sunday, you can celebrate with Sister Sledge, OMD, Kim Wilde, Nick Kershaw, Belinda Carlisle, Paul Carrick, Dave Edmonds, and former Rainbow lead singer Joe Lynn Turner. Fantastic. So, for one and all, I really do appreciate you guys writing in and asking for a specific backup on some of the things that we've been talking about. Specifically on the Road Dog Report, people were asking about Winger. And I was more than happy to let you know that Kip Winger will be a part of the Rockin' the Railroad Festival.
Where is it again? Where is the
Sheridan, Wyoming.
Wyoming.
Sheridan, Wyoming.
Lucky exactly. Ducks, those Wyomingans.
Well, you know, if you're into metal of the 80s, there are plenty of opportunities to check out these bands. B.B. King's here in New York will play host to them. And looking forward to some more of that later this summer.
Sure.
Sometimes the pop culture universe converges in a trio, triplet, trifecta of awesomeness. And when that happens, we're ready. This is a game segment we like to call Rule of Threes.
All right.
Very much. Thank you. Thank you. Rule of Threes from the Bee Gees.
That was great.
As it were. I know. I really enjoy that part of the program. Let's hope the rest of it matches quite as well.
One can only hope.
Yes. So for Rule of Threes, it's a simple game, but a little complicated in the execution. I will tell you the convergent word. It's a pop culture moment, reference, noun, verb, adjective. And you'll have to guess which of the three iterations of this I am talking about when I give you a clue. Now, okay. It's easier to understand once you start playing. Nelson
sure.
Lugo, are you ready?
What are the prizes? What do I win?
You actually get to have a drink of water from our fantastic Radio Free Brooklyn water fountain.
Oh, nice. No, I saw it on the way in. It looks tasty.
I think it's got a switch for your hand and for your foot.
Oh, my.
Like, you know.
Oh, my. Okay. We used to call that a bubbler.
Oh, yes. Well, I used to have something I called a bubbler, too, but that's a long since gone.
Where was that even going to go?
I'm not sure. I started down the road, and then it forked.
All right, fair enough.
And now I'm feeling forked myself.
Okay.
So with today's Rule of Threes,
yeah.
Today's convergent word is Fox.
Ooh.
And so you'll be choosing Fox, the actor, the pop, or the metal.
Okay.
So when I give you the clue, you have to guess as to whether I am referring to award-winning actor of the 80s series Family Ties and 90s series Spin City, Michael J. Fox.
Sure.
English 80s pop chart star Samantha Fox.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Or 1980s pop metal band Britney Fox.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh, so many foxes.
Exactly. I give you the clue. You tell me, actor, pop, or metal.
Okay.
First clue, recorded a remake of a Bay City Rollers tune. Recorded a remake of a Bay City Rollers tune.
I'm going to say pop.
Samantha Fox?
Samantha Fox.
That is correct, sir!
Yeah.
Samantha Fox.
Woo-hoo!
You are correct. You are correct.
Nice.
All right, next one.
Oh, there's
one.
More?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We're going to have a few more. Actually, we'll have one more, and then we'll see how we're doing, and then we might go on to the third one.
Okay.
So which Fox am I referring to?
Sure.
Michael J. Fox, Samantha Fox, or Britney Fox?
Got it.
Played in a band with a member of Spinal Tap.
Oh.
Oh. Played in a band with a member of Spinal Tap.
I'm going to say Michael J. Fox?
That is correct, sir.
Hey!
Michael J. Fox.
Yes.
Now
yes.
Can you tell me to which we are referencing?
What popped into my head was the scene in Back to the Future.
Ah, well, you are very close.
Ooh.
In that it is Michael J. Fox, and he is playing guitar.
Yes.
The film is Light of Day.
Light of
and
Day.
And his band, the Barbusters, included on the bass Michael McKeon.
Look at that.
David St. Hubbins.
Look at that.
Spinal
well, then
Tap.
that was a straight-up guess that I got right.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well done. I can
Thank
see you.
You
were channeling.
Yes.
Our last question.
Right.
Which Fox is this? Mm-hmm. Michael J. Fox, Samantha Fox, or Brittany Fox? Mm-hmm. Named for a Welsh ancestor.
Ooh.
Named for a Welsh ancestor.
I'm going to go with Brittany Fox.
That is correct, sir!
Hey!
Brittany Fox is actually the name of a Welsh ancestor of one of the members of the band.
Yeah, also, it was... I eliminated the two possibles I already said, leaving me the third possible answer.
Well, that's one way to play it, Nelson. That's one way to play it. Yeah. Very well done. Yeah. I'm very, very proud of you. All right. Well, to celebrate Rule of Threes and Nelson Lugo's 3 for 3, I'm going to have to give you a little Samantha Fox. Here's her remake of the Bay City Rollers' I Only Want to Be With You on Radio Free Brooklyn. Yes, that was Samantha Fox. Fantastic stuff. Oh, my gosh. with her cover of the Bay City Rollers, I Only Want to Be With You.
That takes me back.
It takes me back, too. Hey, you guys out in Twitter land, you can hashtag us at PackRatPlanet. Let us know what you think of the show, if you have any questions, you have any comments, etc. for myself. Or if you have a question for the fantastic Mr. Nelson Lugo, please let us know. It's hashtag PackRatPlanet. And that's where we are, Pack Rat Planet Radio on Radio Free Brooklyn. Now, we see a lot of concerts and shows here, and we love to tell you all about them. It's a segment we like to call Showtime.
Showtime!
Yeah, that's it, Showtime. This week, we talk about the post-Mets game Steve Miller concert at Citi Field. Yeah, Saturday's show, it was actually a rainout in the seventh inning, so everybody reconvened on Sunday and played the remainder of the game, another nine innings also, so it was a big day for the Mets, I guess the Cincinnati Reds. Mets prevailing, go Red, go Mets. And so for those of you who have not seen a post-game concert at Citi Field, let me give you the rundown. They drive a really long trailer tractor truck out onto the field, complete with all the instruments and the band and et cetera, and they park it right behind second base, facing home plate. So everybody has a great seat. It's fantastic deal. And if you want to spring the extra $30 to be on the field, you can actually go right there by second base and stand right near your favorite act. So next time, I do recommend. I didn't do it, but I did see the folks down there, and boy, they were really having a ball. Also, because they moved it from Saturday to Sunday, there was less people. So it seemed like there was about 75 people standing in front of Steve Miller in City Field.
That's kind of sad, actually.
Well, yeah, but I think you know, he's a longtime rocker. He's seen it. He's the
he's
Joker.
Done it all.
He's the smoker. He's the Midnight Toker.
Yes, he is.
So I figured he probably had a.
He took it in stride. He's
exactly.
He's a pro.
He took it. Took the stage a mere 20 minutes after the game ended, and immediately launched into Juggle Love, and pushed through a fantastic catalog with the flair and fire of a man half his age.
Oh.
It was fantastic. He even did Abracadabra.
Hey.
Which is that? Let me ask you, Mr. Lugo, in the magic world,
yes.
is Abracadabra loathed or embraced?
Neither. It's a word like many other words in the lexicon of performers.
But I mean the song by Steve Miller. Is it?
I think you know what? I personally enjoy it. I don't enjoy it when people point it out.
What brings me to that is the incredible Burt Wonderstone.
Yes.
Because as I recall, that was part of their act at the outset.
Yes.
Deliberately cheese.
Oh, yes. So oh, yeah.
I was wondering if that's a sort of
well,
a touchstone.
Many,
and,
well,
and
I think I even used at one point in my early career, I used Loving Spoonful, Do You Believe in Magic?
Ooh.
As a sort of wink and a nod and a tongue-in-cheek kind of nod to, hey, I'm about to do something really cheesy. It's called magic. Enjoy. So I think every magician at one point or another does that one cheesy act. So.
Oh, my gosh. That is hilarious. Jeez. Because I'm always reminded of the Final Countdown on Arrested Development.
Yeah, you
Will
and,
Arnett.
And a million billion other people. Yes. Okay. No magician in the history of magic is ever going to live down that moment. Arrested Development has done more to ruin the art of magic than most magicians do. So kudos to them.
Yeah, that's what a shame. to finish up with the Steve Miller, he's still got the voice, still got the guitar chops. Good. If he plays in your area, don't miss it. He even did a version of The Stake, which is this great Joe Walsh type rocker song from his album Book of Dreams. So I definitely recommend it, and I recommend seeing a band at Citi Field after a game. The next one up, Heart on July 25th, and if you can spring for the $30 to get on the out there on second base, I highly recommend it. I mean, seeing Ann Wilson, you know, yell Barracuda as you're stepping off of second base to try to steal third, I think that's might be a classic moment.
That's got to be on somebody's bucket list.
You would think.
Yeah.
Mine, maybe not. I love Heart, though. I might try to make that show.
I love Heart, too. Yeah. Maybe I'll do it.
Our second show that we're going to be talking about today is George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic at Governor's Island. They were the headliners of the Funkin' Q. opening band was actually a great band called Funky Kong with members
dear.
Of Lettuce and a couple of other. But they really brought it out. They were
great. Good.
They were a great opening band.
Good.
Let me tell you, George Clinton, Dr. Funkenstein himself, he had a stage full of musicians. He brought the noise from the get-go. Those expecting to see the rainbow locks or the moo-moo of recent years, that's not the guy that came out. He was dressed in all white hat. He held court as the premier mind expander of the funk.
Wow.
And they brought it. And that audience was ready to go. And also, I have to say, they have this place called Governor's Club. The great folks at Marquee Concerts and the Lure Group do these concerts at this place. It's out in Governor's Island, and it's a great, great venue. There's enough room. There's picnic tables. There's sand. There's a dance floor. I mean, it's a great, great deal. And the ferry that goes from Manhattan to Governor's Island normally ends at like 6, but they keep it going all night. just, you know, for until this particular event is over. So
that's good to know.
I can't tell you enough about this venue. It was really excellent. So let me tell you, George Clinton playing all the great stuff, nice long extended jams. People were ready to go. People were ready to dance. It was a fantastic show. So I can't tell you enough about George Clinton still bringing it. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. Anyway, to celebrate that and to celebrate the 4th of July, as Parliament Funkadelic says, it's one nation under a groove.
So I can't get around it.
So low, you can't so get under it.
So high, you can't get over
so
it.
So high, can't get over it.
This is a chance. This is a chance.
Here's a chance to dance our way out of our constriction. Gonna be freaking up and down the hang-up alleyway. With the groove I only got, we shall all be moved. Ready or not, here we come.
One nation and we're on the move.
Nothing can stop us now.
One nothing can stop us now.
Nothing but the funk, ladies and gentlemen. Parliament Funkadelic with One Nation Under a Groove. Yes, funkiness abounds with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic. I highly recommend seeing them in concert. They still bring the funk. I wonder if director Jon Favreau ever cringes when somebody brings up the scene from the film PCU where he plays stoner student Gutter and he introduces Parliament Funkadelic and barely gets through it. Speaking of which, barely getting through it, let's talk to our fantastic in-house guest, the multi-talented entertainer, Nelson Lugo. How are you, Nelson?
Hey, I'm well. I'm having a good time.
And, you know, it's funny. I was trying to think of exactly what to refer to you as. Do you prefer multi-level entertainer?
Oh, goodness,
or?
No, because I don't think that's accurate.
Oh, okay. So straight up magician?
Yeah, I'm a magician. I actually happen to like the word magician. I know a lot of magicians try to distance themselves from being called a magician. Like there's some who prefer being called illusionist, or there's this one guy who calls himself an impossibility specialist. Yeah, you're making a very cringy worthy face, and I'm making the very same cringeworthy face.
Impossibility specialist sounds like one of those horrible made-up Google things, you know,
yes.
Like creativity officer in charge of impossibility, you know.
Right. Right, it's a title at Google.
Yes.
Essentially. Oh. No, I am a magician. I prefer to be called a magician.
Now, do you recall when you learned your very first trick?
Yeah, it's a story I tell a lot. I got a magic kit when I was 9 years old for Christmas, and that was it. It was all downhill from there, basically. Most kids get a magic kit for some gift-giving holiday. It's a pretty common gift to get, whereas most kids will play with it for like a day, maybe even a week, and then it collects dust in a closet forevermore. I still have my kit. It's in a shelf in my apartment, and I often still open it up and look at it. So, yeah.
What were some of the tricks that you were doing?
I think the very first trick I ever learned is this. It's a trick called a lotable. And essentially what happens is you lift up this, what looks like essentially a vase, like a little plastic vase that you put a flower in, right? Mm-hmm. It's got a bulbous bottom and a long neck, and you pour water out of it. And you pass your hands over it, and you say some magic words, and then you continue to pour more water out of it, and you sort of you tip it upside down, and you get all the water out. You pass your hand over it, say a magic word, and then more water comes out. That was the very first trick that I ever learned to do. And you're giving me a face.
I'm trying to picture this in my mind because I think I do remember that as part of the magic kit because it was that it was the wand that you pull apart and the flowers come out.
Right.
And,
sure. And there's always like a length of rope in there to do a rope trick.
Three rings.
Right. There's always a ring or a couple of rings. There's always a deck of cards that you can't show other people.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So it's a gaffe. It's a gimmick. It's a wonderfully designed little plastic a toy, essentially, that allows you to do one really, really great magic trick. And in the hands of a master, it could be incredible. In the hands of a 9-year-old, it's like it's a puzzle at best. So
it's funny. I remember seeing magic things like that. And I also remember seeing magic sets that were branded somehow.
Oh, yeah.
With a different person or television show like that.
Sure.
The one I recall most vividly, though, was the short-lived Black's Magic starring Hal Linden.
Oh, yes.
And he had like some Black's Magic branded thing. And it was at a toy store near my house.
The one I have right now in my apartment is the Harry Blackstone Jr. Master Magician set. Ooh. Yeah, it wasn't the big box. It was there was a small one, a medium one, and a big one. Mine was the medium one.
Okay. Now yeah. you grew up in New York, as I understand.
I did. I was born in the Bronx.
Oh, wow. Now, yeah. So
the Bronx, New York.
Boogie down.
The boogie down.
So when you were young, did you get a chance to see any of the sort of magic Broadway or off-Broadway shows that people...
Oh, goodness, no. No. I grew up incredibly poor. Oh, okay. So poor. In fact, this magic kit, whoever gave it to me was certainly not my parents. It was somebody outside the family who had money. Oh. And I got hooked immediately. But the thing is, I was also a huge fan of public television, Channel 13.
Oh.
And there was shows like 3-2-1 Contact where... Harry Blackstone Jr. would show up a lot. There was all kinds of shows that Doug Henning had a PBS special at one point.
Yeah.
And a number of them would also show up on Sesame Street. And so I was seeing a lot of televised magic. David Copperfield was just starting to get all his magic specials, his foot in the door into that world. And so I was watching all of those specials, which I believe were on ABC, I believe, at the time. And yeah, so I was being inundated with magicians. I just could never afford to see them live. And in fact, the first live magician I saw was when I was, like in my early teens, and it was a horrible, horrible street magician who he prided himself on just being horrible, and that's how he got his. That's how he passed the hat. It was funny, but it wasn't magic.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Well. Now, how did you come to take your place in the burlesque world? Because I don't know of any magicians involved in burlesque.
There's actually quite a few.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I mean, other than me, there's a lovely gentleman by the name of Albert Cadabra who's done a lot of hosting and a lot of stage stuff. There's another lovely guy named Matt Holtzclaw who's I have a personal man crush on. I guess my secret's out now, but he's not only is he just a really talented magician, but he just he has a way of entertaining crowds that comes naturally to him that I have to work at a little bit, and so I'm very envious of his stage work.
Oh, okay.
But the way I got into it back when I was trying to be an actor in New York,
I think I saw that headshot.
Yeah. One of the things that I could not do, one of the things in my part of the rules of going to the school, which was AMDA, American Musical and Dramatic Academy, Bar and Grill, and like one of the things that I had to swear was that I was not going to get any acting paid work. Like I couldn't seek out work while I was studying acting, and so in order to eat because I didn't have time to have a day job because I'm having classes all day, so I can only work at night, but I couldn't work like a full 8-hour shift at night because I still had early classes. Mm-hmm. So what I would do is I would go to cabarets and do magic tricks. And sometimes it was for tips. Sometimes I'd actually get paid out by the bar. Like it was, but it was also part of a larger show. Like they were just having a cabaret show, and then they have like the drag queen, and then they have like the dueling pianos, and then they have like, then they have a burlesque act, right? And so one of the shows I was at was called Floating Vaudeville, and this was at Galapagos before it moved to its new location. It was the original Galapagos, and the host of the show just didn't show up for whatever reason. I don't remember why. And I had been doing that show for quite a while, and they said, "Would you like to host tonight's show?" And I'm like, "Yeah, all right, I'll do it." And they said, "We'll give you 25 more bucks." I'm like, "Yeah, I'll definitely do it now," because I desperately needed that $25.
Yeah.
And so I hosted the show, and I had never hosted a show before in my life. I certainly didn't know how to do it because I was always backstage when I was being introduced. So I never actually seen a host do anything. And so I kind of went, my only frame of reference was circus ringmasters, and they come out and they would introduce acts in a very particular way. And I love the circus. I would have been that kid who ran away to join the circus, except the circus train never passed through the Bronx. And so I kind of went out there and I kind of introduced all of the acts like a circus ringmaster would. Luckily, it worked.
Oh, wow.
This one burlesque performer who's long since retired by the name of Veronica Sweet, discovered me and said, come host my burlesque show. And this was back when there was only like three burlesque shows in town. I did it and they kept asking me back. And then the second show wanted me to do something. So I did that. And before you know it, it just kind of grew completely out of control. And I became a burlesque magician, essentially.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, can you tell me just a little bit about Gathering the Magic and also your upcoming project that you're working on?
Gathering the Magic is my solo show. It is my 75-minute sort of slice-of-life storytelling that's been paired up with really sophisticated stage magic. And I retired from producing burlesque about 2 years ago. And because at no point when I was 9 years old did I ever imagine, when I grow up, I want to be a burlesque producer. That was never that was never a conversation I ever had. So I, somewhere along the line, I forgot I was a magician, decided to return to that and double down on it. And I had also discovered the world of storytelling, like The Moth and This American Life and things like that. So I found that I had... I found that I was already doing storytelling. I just wasn't doing it in a formalized way. Like I didn't realize there was a formula to it. And then finally I learned the formula. And before you know it, I had collected a bunch of stories. And then I decided, well, this could be a show. And so one thing led to another. I found a director and the theater. I found a theater that was willing to give me a shot. And before you know it, I now have a 75-minute storytelling slash magic show that I sort of tour around to cities whenever possible.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I think that's the first time I've actually said that out loud myself. And it's just, it's weird how that just all works out.
Well, I know that the new project that you're workshopping right now,
yeah,
that you invite folks to come take a look at sometime soon,
yeah,
deals with not just your career, but your life.
Yeah, yeah. It's I found that after I wrote Gathering the Magic, I love Gathering the Magic. It's a very sweet show. It's very sincere. And it does get vulnerable, but it never gets uncomfortable. Like, it's always a controlled vulnerability. And I found that I had stories left over that could go much deeper. And so this next show is going to really explore my relationship with death, that's both physical and emotional. Mm-hmm. And what that means to me. And, you know, and so it's going to be far more vulnerable, a little far more raw in terms of just the subject matter, because the subject matter will be uncomfortable because I will be talking about death. But I kind of like to think of it like a roller coaster. Like, you get onto a roller coaster and it's really, really scary. It's scary. But then you come right back into the station and you're absolutely fine. So I'm at least that's the experiment, how I think of it in my head. So. Hopefully work out. So yeah, I'm doing a 30-minute excerpt of it for the Tank Theater for a festival that they have called Dark Fest, where they don't turn on the stage lights at all. And so all of the shows in there are basically responsible for figuring out new and alternative ways to light their show or incorporate darkness into their show.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean it's sort of a play on words. Like, you know, they need to raise funds to keep the lights on, waka waka.
Gotcha.
But it's also a way to sort of create awareness for energy consumption as well.
Oh,
you know, so you know, greener planet and stuff.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to watch out for when that comes up at Dark Fest. It sounds like a
absolutely.
A great
you can
show.
Go. You can go to the tanknyc.org, I believe. If not, I'm sure they're. Or you can just go to my site, which is nelsonlugo.com, and there'll be dates and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds great. We're going to do a little bit more here, and then we're going to come back. I want to talk to you a little bit more about your circus.
Ooh.
Yeah. But in the meantime, let's talk a little bit actually about the New Orleans Running of the Bulls.
Yeah.
Which, if you don't know about this, it's pretty insane. For our segment that we call In the Gumbo, we always like to throw a little New Orleans into the mix. And if you don't know about the New Orleans Running of the Bulls, let me let you know, this is a pretty amazing, amazing event. July 9th through the 12th, the 9th annual Running of the Bulls in New Orleans. It's the city's most incredible summer event. And let me tell you why. There's thousands of people who run the streets similarly to the Running of the Bulls in Pamplona, but instead of bulls, it's roller derby people. With horns on their helmets and plastic bats in their hands. It's pretty incredible. The Roller Bulls, ladies and gentlemen. So
the running of the Bulls.
It's and let me tell you, it's hard to believe it's their ninth year.
Their ninth year?
Yeah.
How am I only hearing about this now?
They started out, kind of small, and it just expanded. I mean, people love this event. So I highly recommend anybody who's interested in the New Orleans Running of the Bulls, please get to nolabulls.com for more details. There's still a possibility that you can participate. Like I said, nolabulls.com for more details.
I have friends in New Orleans. I'm very disappointed they didn't tell me.
Well, maybe they want to save all that roller derby fun for themselves, etc. But let me tell you, the people I know that have been down there, they just rave about this event. It's pretty amazing.
Amazing.
All right. Well, usually we try to find a musician or a pop culture person of some kind that we're interested in catching up with them. It's our section we like to call Checking In.
I'm checking in.
He's checking in.
I'm checking in.
Checking in. 1985 was a huge year for the Thompson Twins in general, still riding high on the success of their mega platinum Into the Gap album. High rotation singles like Hold Me Now, Doctor Doctor, and King for a Day. But in that summer, they, like a select set of popular bands of that era, were playing Live Aid. They played the the U.S. side of the concert at JFK Stadium. Strangely enough, they played back-to-back and sort of alongside Madonna, which this was her Into the Groove, Desperately Seeking Susan era Madonna.
Sure, sure.
Having to deal with some recent compromising photos that had just been published.
Oh, yes. I do remember that.
Actually,
yes.
Addressed the audience about that. Luckily enough, I was able to speak with Tom Bailey not too long ago about a number of things. Here's what he recalls about that day and about playing with Madonna.
I do recall it quite well. And you know how it is with these things. One of the previous bands had taken too much time, so they suddenly said to us, you've got to cut down. We were going to do three songs, and we only ended up doing two. And so we made a quick decision, basically standing behind the curtain, to drop one song. And then someone introduces, I think it was Bette Midler, actually, and the curtain rises, okay, and we start playing Hold Me Now. And I start to walk towards the mic stand, because I'm going to have to sing the first line of the song, and realize that it's so far away that the guitar cable isn't long enough for me to get there.
No.
So I had to make a strangely significant decision about whether I was a singer or a guitarist.
of all the times for that to be the moment, right?
So I unplugged the guitar and went for the singing job. which was unnerving, you know. And then we finished that, and someone got me a longer cable to do Revolution.
Now you were over on the U.S. side of it, right?
That's right, because we were actually working in New York, recording Here's to Future Days with Nile Rodgers at the time.
And then Madonna comes out right after you. And did you play for a track? I mean, how did that work exactly?
I guess Nile was the connection between us. I'd known Madonna from having met her a few times, but he'd just recently done the Like a Virgin album, and he was working with us, so we were connected through him. I think when she was performing, he said, why don't you come and sing with us, and we'll be backing vocals for you. And it helped out. It was one of those things that you don't think, but people ask me about it all the time, ever since then. It's been like, how did that happen? But it was actually, it was very casually done, and, she was just beginning her career. I mean, she'd had, just beginning to have major, major hits then. But I tell you what, I was backstage with Madonna and thinking, I'll just have a chat with Madonna. And some kids climbed up a fence and were shouting at her. So I said, let's go in through this door here and get out of the way so it's a bit more quiet. And coincidentally, we walked into the space where all the performers are having their photographs taken. So I walked through the door with Madonna, and there, standing in front of us, was Mick Jagger, Bob Dylan, Tina Turner, It was like, I completely freaked.
Oh, wow.
It was, you know, so I kind of reversed out of it. I thought, wow, I'm starstruck.
That's a pretty great story. Tom Bailey.
That have floored me.
No, I know, man. And if you're interested in hearing more about Tom Bailey, you can go to goldenageofmusicvideo.com. The interview that I did with him, the transcript of that is available there. Just go to the search and type in Tom Bailey or Thompson Twins. And you can figure that out. Well, I'm sorry. I'm starting to feel like Molly Shannon or Anna Gasteyer with my close mic.
Yes, yes, yes.
Anyway, also in each episode, we like to take a fresh look at the classic music video courtesy of the video's artist. So we call that the Video Rewind. Thank you. In 1984, the Greg Kinn Band took a catchy hook, created a pop single for a song called Jeopardy, and just couldn't be stopped. The video for the song was a low-budget affair directed by San Francisco's stalwart director, Joe Day. And in the early days of MTV, this narrative style was basically a schlocky monster movie clip that fell into heavy rotation and became Greg Kinn and the Greg Kinn Band's greatest hit. In recent years, Greg has become an author and continues to DJ in the San Francisco area and continues to play live with the Greg Kinn Band. I spoke with Greg not too long ago about how he and Joe came up with this off-the-wall clip.
Yeah, I think the whole thing came together when Joe Day came up with the concept for Jeopardy. Because it was like, I remember having lunch with him, and he said, well, what do you like? And I remember telling him, I like horror movies. I like, Ray Harryhausen. I like monster movies. I like the old Universal horror movies. And like, bingo. You could see the light turn on in his head. He said, how about, a Night of the Living Dead? Where you're getting married and it turns into a horror movie. And I said, Joe, you can make this as realistic as you want. My life is an open book.
And I've heard you say that, in a way, it's based on your first marriage.
Oh, it is. Oh, it definitely is. And I'll tell you the truth. I joked before about it, but I am definitely going to hell for the things we did in that church after hours.
Uh-oh.
Good gravy.
Yeah, if there's something I don't want to hear more about, I think it's Greg Kinn's sex life. At this point,
I'm oddly curious now.
Well, my curiosity is not in jeopardy. You put it that way.
Oh, dear.
I know. Thank you. Part two of Video Rewind. Terry Nunn, the founder and lead singer of Berlin. We spoke with her not too long ago. Berlin being the big synth pop 80s band that scored many big hits, including The Metro. And who can forget their multi-platinum Top Gun anthem and instant prom theme, Take My Breath Away. The video for their single, No More Words, was a narrative also, a full-on tribute to Bonnie and Clyde, complete with guns, banks, romance, all of that. And Terry told us that the inspiration for this particular video came from her first kiss, which actually took place after watching Bonnie and Clyde.
But it was a kiss, and it was meant to be a kiss, and we were watching the scene where Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty are they're in grass, like really tall grass, and he's just kind of playing with her face, and she's laying there, and I think he kissed her there, and then Michael Van Tassel, that was his name, I'll never forget it, leaned over and kissed me, and oh my God, I just thought that, the world began that moment. So the ideas were thrown around for No More Words, I threw that in the ring. I said, I would really like to be Bonnie and Clyde. And the label liked it because John and I were thrown together in everything because he was my partner and he was good looking and girls loved him. So yeah, let's have him have love affairs in every video. That'll work. That'll be great. So he was Clyde, and then we had the rest of the band be kind of like a, gang, and it was fun. That's my favorite video that we did.
You could catch Terry Nunn and the current lineup of Berlin on the road this summer. Check them out at berlinband.com. Terry Nunn, she's a great, great interview. And they have a new album out. Actually, it came out last year, but it's still rocking and rolling. It's fantastic. It's called Animal.
Okay.
And as far as synth pop is concerned, they've been able to modernize their sound and still be faithful to the Berlin sort of sound.
Really?
You know. Her voice is still intact. I mean, she's great. And okay. She's a great, great performer. I saw her at the Cutting Room last year, and it was just amazing.
Nice.
You know, still being on the road and still being able to do it that well. I think she really deserves a lot of kudos. So sometimes there's a question on our minds here with an answer that's just plain hard. That's right. It's time for a really hard trivia question.
Really hard trivia questions. They're hard.
That's right. They're hard. So this go around, our prize for this week's really hard trivia question for our Twitter folks. Remember, you can tweet the answer to hashtag PackRatPlanet. That's hashtag PackRatPlanet. Tweet us your answer, and you may be able to get this prize. For answering this, it's the National Lampoon 4-CD box set right here. It includes the White Album, Greatest Hits, That's Not Funny, That's Sick, and Sex, Drugs, Rock and Roll, and The End of the World. So a great 4-CD set, a fantastic value. So we're going to get to our really hard trivia question. You tell me the answer, but remember, text it. Tweet it to us with hashtag PackRatPlanet, and we'd be more than happy to hand this National Lampoon 4 CD box set over to you. Now, the question is, in keeping with this 4th of July weekend, who was elected the first governor of New York on June 9th, 1777, and why is that significant to PackRat Planet Radio today? Who was elected the first governor of New York on June 9th, 1777, and why is that significant to PackRat Planet Radio today? We'll be coming back to that a little bit later. Let's see if people can figure that one out. No Googling. You're on your honor.
Right.
In August of 1985, two films centered on high school hit the theaters, both destined to become classics. But now, it's time to see just which film is the best summertime geek film of 1985. So, coming up in Brooklyn on July 17th is Music Video Time Machine, Weird Science versus Real Genius. It's a full-on battle for domination. This event will be stacked wall-to-wall with great music videos from that era, along with trivia game show called Science Genius, where contestants will pit their brains against each other in tests of trivia from both films. And with the Gemini and Scorpio crew, you never know what other shenanigans will pop up. So check it out at musicvideotimemachine.com for further details. And check out musicvideotimemachine.com in general for various music video-oriented events. Music Video Time Machine, reimagining the music video one crazy night at a time. Also, check out goldenageofmusicvideo.com for a feature that investigates the battle between these particular folks, Real Genius and Weird Science. Now, case in point, Real Genius has some great party scenes, but unfortunately, very lame songs. Case in point, Y&T's Summertime Girls and Bryan Adams' One Night Love Affair. Ugh. Weird Science wins on the Oingo Boingo song, Rat's Wanted Man, and this big punk blowout song. So from PackRat Planet Radio to you, here's Killing Joke with 80s.
I have to push, I have to strike.
Yep, that sounds like us living in the 80s, ladies and gentlemen. That's Killing Joke with 80s. We are just about out of time, but I wanted to do a quick note here to I wanted to ask Nelson.
Yeah, what's up?
Actually, as I understand it, you were circus ringmaster for a period.
Yeah, I was the guest ringmaster for the Big Apple Circus on the last leg of their tour in right up here in Queens, Corona Park, Queens, and the main ringmaster, a lovely, lovely gentleman by the name of John Kennedy Kane, fell ill at the very last second. And so I came in and learned the show and basically kept his top hat warm until he got better.
Wow. That must have been a real bucket list moment.
It wasn't, because being a ringmaster was alongside, you know, like being an astronaut and a prince of a small nation back when I was like 5 years old. So like I put that, like, I guess I should put back astronaut and prince of a small nation now, because impossible things are possible, I guess.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. That's great. I want to thank you. Thank you to Nelson Lugo for being our special guest this week. It's been informative.
And thank you for lowering your standards. I appreciate it.
I wouldn't call it that at all. and actually, we haven't had any real good guesses for our trivia question this go round. Who was the New York governor elected, first New York governor elected July 9th, 1777? He was Brigadier General George Clinton.
What?
That's why we picked it
this week. Oh, that's right. Because he brought in the funk.
That's right. That's the
not the original guy, but he's an old guy.
Not so much. And actually, Brigadier General, he actually became vice president.
Good for him.
Yeah, I know. I mean, not everybody can
ringmaster, vice presidents.
Exactly.
Everybody's living the dream.
All right. Just want to say thanks to everyone for all your help this go round. I'm Stephen Patello. You can catch me at Stephen Patello on the interwebs at goldenageofmusicvideo.com and musicvideotimemachine.com. Thank you for listening to Pack Rat Planet Radio on Radio Free Brooklyn. Good night. Thank you. And be good to yourself.